Hello and welcome to Don't Miss a Beat, presented by Inside Cardiology. Don't Miss a Beat is a monthly podcast hosted by myself, Muthu Vadaganathan, and my co-host, Dr. Stephen Green, providing a regular news roundup of the latest evidence and clinical trial insights across cardiorenal metabolism. Hosted by practicalcardiology.com, Don't Miss a Beat is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Don't Miss a Beat. Muthu and I are really excited to have you with us today. We are here with our pre-ACC Scientific Sessions preview episode. A lot of great science due to be presented, but you know, accompanying this great science is this is going to be, you know, really the first large-scale U.S. In-person cardiology conference. And I mean, couldn't be more excited again on this combination of both the science being presented, but also getting to see all our friends and close colleagues in person again.
It's going to be so exciting. I think it's been such a long hiatus, in many cases over 2 years since many of us have been at an in-person meeting, and especially on the ACC global stage, to see even some of our international colleagues. It'll be very much welcome. And I think a lot of us are looking forward to this. In addition, we have, of course, a terrific ACC scientific lineup of the best science and innovation being presented. And it almost is difficult to escape a scientific congress without discussing the SGLT2 inhibitor class. And just a few days ago, we learned about the breaking news of EMPA-KIDNEY being stopped early for overwhelming efficacy at the interim analysis. I think that EMPA-KIDNEY will add a critical piece to the puzzle of the overall evidence base for SGLT2 inhibition in chronic kidney disease, will expand the population of the studied population, including that substantial group of patients with normal albuminuria levels, as well as a substantial group of patients without diabetes in this cohort. And I think I'm super excited to take a look at the data once presented, as well as the publication.
Yeah, I mean, the timing really works out great. And although the data themselves aren't gonna be presented at ACC, just having the headlines come out right before that conference, I'm sure there's gonna be a lot of great scientific dialogue about EMPA-KIDNEY results. And I completely agree with you. I mean, there's such now overwhelming evidence, for the SGLT2 inhibitors in patients with chronic kidney disease, and EMPA-KIDNEY really fits so nicely now for the full spectrum of kidney disease. Now we're really going to have data. We started with, type 2 diabetes only. Now we're progressing really to EMPA-KIDNEY, where the majority did not have diabetes in the trial. Patients with more severe GFR were included in some of the other trials. And as you mentioned, some patients with normal albuminuria levels, so really going to try to fill out the full spectrum of the kidney disease population.
And it's striking that now we have a fourth chronic kidney disease trial stopped early, and three of those were stopped early for overwhelming benefit. And I think it speaks to the consistency across the class. So why don't we kick things off in terms of the ACC lineup? Steve, would you like to start us off with the first trial in terms of our picks?
Sure. It was a tough choice. Like you mentioned, there's a lot of great science in clinical trials, late-breaking trials being presented at ACC. But we've had to make some picks. So the first pick a top ACC trial to be on the watch for, I'll say, is the DIAMOND trial. And this is a really interesting trial, and it's patiromer versus placebo in patients with HFrEF who are at risk for hyperkalemia and actually had to have MRAs or RAS inhibitors discontinued, or currently have hyperkalemia on RAS inhibitors or MRAs. So really trying to think about, hyperkalemia, it's a conundrum. It's a problem that we encounter all the time. It leads to discontinuation of our GDMT patients with HFrEF. So trying to see if patiromer has a place for really enablement and control of potassium levels in a HFrEF patient population. But, you know, a couple of things that are really stand out as unique and things to be on the watch for with this trial is it's really unique trial design. You know, we mentioned the inclusion criteria, again, HFrEF patients with either active hyperkalemia on RAS inhibitors or past hyperkalemia on that led to discontinuation on RAS inhibitors. But what the trial did was they included a run-in period where these patients were then told over 12 weeks open label to optimize their GDMT, their RAS inhibitors and MRA. And then after 12-week run-in, then there was the double-blind randomized period where there was either continuation of patiramer or discontinuation and switch to placebo. And the primary endpoint, was changed from a clinical endpoint, which was affected because of the COVID pandemic. They had to have a switch, but the new primary endpoint is change in potassium level, which we have heard that the trial was positive. So we already know the results for that. But the key thing I think to watch out for will be what the secondary endpoints show, you know, on this RAS enablement issue, on the discontinuation of some of these MRAs and RAS inhibitors. So really excited to see what those secondary endpoints and really just the whole body of evidence from the DIAMOND trial show. But what do you think, Mutu? I know you're looking forward to seeing the DIAMOND results.
Yeah, it's a very, very important trial. We know that RAS inhibitor intolerance related to hyperkalemia is an important issue in clinical practice and may be one of the major factors that lend to lower uptake and lower treatment persistence of MRAs in practice. Hyperkalemia conceptually has always been thought of as this episodic condition, if you may, or electrolyte imbalance. But yet here, we're changing that dialogue. We're thinking of hyperkalemia more as a longitudinal issue that may continue to pose therapeutic issues in clinical practice and thus should be similarly met with a therapy that is a long-term therapy. In heart failure, we of course now have a number of therapies and in fact our guidelines now support combination medical therapies. To me, I think the biggest element in terms of how this trial and ultimately how this therapy is viewed in clinical practice is polypharmacy and will patients, clinicians, payers be open to yet another therapy in the armamentarium? And I think part of that value proposition will be how compelling these data are in terms of that enablement strategy.
Yeah, I completely agree. There's of course a lot of sensitivities around polypharmacy in our HFrEF patients. I think, you know, in trying to think about the value of a therapy like this, it'll also be interesting to see what the run-in period looks like, because that was also included in the press release by the sponsor. You know, by definition, the patients were either actively hyperkalemic on RAS inhibitors or not on optimal RAS inhibitor because of prior hyperkalemia. Yet the company during the press release, among more than 1,000 patients in the trial, they said that more than 85% were able to be optimized over that 12 weeks with up to 3 times a day patiramer along for the ride. So it'll be interesting to see, what kind of delta you can take in this patient population, even at the end of the run-in period. So really looking forward to digesting some of these interesting data.
Really, really interesting trial. Looking forward to that being presented. Next, we'll move to SCORED. SCORED, many of you will recall, is a large-scale, over 10,000-patient randomized clinical trial of the SGLT1-2 inhibitor, so sotagliflozin, compared with placebo, in patients with chronic kidney disease, type 2 diabetes, and who had additional cardiovascular risk factors. Now, the trial had previously been reported and was a positive clinical trial. Importantly, it is perhaps, I believe, the largest randomized clinical trial of chronic kidney disease that's been conducted. And while the trial had a longer duration of planned follow-up, due to loss of funding from the original sponsor, Sanofi, the trial was curtailed to about 1.3 years follow-up. And we know now that the trial is supporting ultimately regulatory submission by Lexicon Pharmaceuticals, and which is currently in progress. Now, the primary endpoint of this trial as well was changed related to COVID-19, and I think we're going to hear this as a recurrent theme throughout the year, to total cardiovascular death and heart failure events, including worsening heart failure events outside the hospital. And the trial was markedly positive with a 26% risk reduction for that endpoint. In addition, the original co-primary endpoints of major adverse cardiovascular events and the composite of cardiovascular death and first heart failure hospitalization were both met, adding robustness to the scientific findings. Now, what was of interest was that in breaking down that MACE endpoint, sotagliflozin reduced risks of some of the components of MACE, including myocardial infarction and stroke. And so Professor Deepak Bhatt at the upcoming ACC sessions will be presenting a focused look at major adverse cardiovascular events in the SCORDA trial. And I think we're going to see a bit of a more granular look at myocardial infarction and stroke, which we really haven't seen in terms of effect signals in the number and the growing body of evidence that we have related to SGLT2 inhibitors as a whole. Now, why there may be some discrepancies or differences in those effects, we'll have to see. Certainly, there's probably most heterogeneity around this MACE endpoint. There was modest benefits perhaps as a whole in terms of the class, with some therapies affecting it more than others, depending on the setting of therapy and the population. But it also raises intriguing questions around whether there's an SGLT1 effect that's being at play. What do you think about this, Steve?
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. And I think, you know, we're learning more and more about what SGLT1, might bring to the table. I think it's, we know from just even looking at the side effect profile of the sotagliflozin trials that it seemed to be a little different than SGLT2. So it seems like biologically there's something going on from that perspective. But now does it spill over to a differential effect on efficacy and atherosclerotic endpoints? So I'm excited to see, how Deepak Bhatt frames this during the talk. I'm really looking forward to seeing what this has to show in terms of these atherosclerotic endpoints. So for our third now trial that we'd like to highlight from our ACC top list, let's talk about SALT. You know, something that we're all very familiar with, taking care of our heart failure patients. You know, how often do you see your patient in clinic or in the inpatient setting? You talk about sodium restriction, and it gets kind of passed down from generation to generation of things you need to talk about with a heart failure patient. But really, you know, it's unsettling that when you look at the guidelines, you see this level of evidence C that's kind of been haunting us there for some time. And there's actually been even some randomized trials that maybe even suggest harm with SALT restriction. So in that context, I'm really looking forward to Dr. Justin Ezekowitz is presenting the results of sodium HF, which is a pragmatic open label strategy trial of counseling to a low sodium, less than 1500 milligram diet versus usual care. And this is expected to have a little over 1,000 patients or so. And it's looking at hard cardiovascular endpoints. So not surrogate endpoints, but hard cardiovascular endpoints, all-cause mortality or CV events as the primary. And then it'll have important secondary endpoints like KCCQ and 6-minute walk, et cetera. You know, I think the thing that will be looked at most in this trial will be, well, what about adherence? You know, how adherent or realistic is it to have this 1500 milligram diet? And then how is that actually recorded? The investigators will be using a 3-day diet log that is periodically assessed over the course of the trial. And they present some data in their great design paper in the American Heart Journal talking about the validity of this approach for ascertaining salt intake versus even, you know, biologic things like urine sodium, for example. So it seems to have reasonable validation. But it'll be really interesting to see, both of all, what the adherence to this is, but then also, does it have any effect? And again, it's been a gap in our evidence for heart failure. But Mutu, what do you think?
No, it's really remarkable that some of the core aspects of our day-to-day management of heart failure really lack a robust evidence base. And you together with your colleagues are leading, for instance, the TRANSFORM trial, and I think filling the diuretic gap. Here again, is just this critical piece of day-to-day management of heart failure that I'm really excited about. I think this is perhaps one of the more exciting trials at ACC, addressing a very critical element. To your point, I think that the pragmatism of this is that it is based on the counseling element that is being tested. And ultimately, when generalizing the findings of this trial, it will also speak to whether counseling related to sodium restriction does influence treatment outcomes. And so I think that that is going to be an important element. Of course, the degree of implementation, the degree of adherence to that low sodium diet, I think will add rigor to those findings. But even the overarching message of does counseling influence outcomes will be critically important.
Yeah.
So we can move to the final trial, which is prompt heart failure. And again, another implementation question. Prompt heart failure is being led out of Yale University by Dr. Tariq Ahmad. And this is a 1,300 patient trial in which patients with heart failure with reduced ejection fraction in the ambulatory setting who are not on optimal medical therapy, that is four-drug comprehensive medical therapy that are currently recommended in treatment guidelines, are presented providers are presented a prompt, and that's basically a drop-down menu for multiple options for therapeutic optimization versus no prompt. And it's a very pragmatic trial in that patients are followed via the AHR. And the primary endpoint is the number of GDMT optimizations within the 30-day window. Patients are also being followed for important secondary outcomes, including individual titrations and changes, as well as clinical outcomes and costs of care. I think that this is a very exciting trial as well because of the simplicity and generalizability of the intervention. Something like this, like a clinical decision support, can be implemented across EHR systems, and if proven to be effective, can actually advance the field forward in terms of readily deployable mechanisms to improve GDMT uptake, which is something that, of course, we've been discussing for years now. I think that things to watch out for is which elements are going to actually improve or fail to improve with this clinical decision support tool. This is really addressing that inertia reminder type initiative. And so perhaps low-hanging fruits like beta blockers, perhaps generic therapies like ACE inhibitors and ARBs will be optimized compared with higher barrier therapies like ARNI and the SGLT2 inhibitors. Furthermore, it's a relatively modest-sized trial with short duration follow-up. So while we're interested in clinical outcomes, we likely won't have sufficient power to actually examine whether this CDS type approach, electronic alert approach, actually influences clinical outcomes. What are your thoughts, Steve?
So yeah, I'm super excited about this trial. I mean, Dr. Ahmad at Yale and that group is really doing great work. And I think this kind of dovetails off what their recent trial was, REVEAL-HF at the last AHA, which was a similar implementation trial where an electronic alert of showing clinicians the risk level, the one-year mortality of patients, unfortunately, in an electronic EHR format did not affect GDMT management. But here we're being very prescriptive in the intervention. It's an electronic EHR alert, but it's being very prescriptive, as you mentioned, with, you know, like what the vital signs, blood pressure are like, and what specific recommendations might fit for that patient. You know, you and I have talked so much about this, you know, culture of clinical inertia that seems to be, in the outpatient US practice. And, you wonder if like what kind of nudges are clinicians going to need to try to optimize GDMT among eligible patients and hopefully reduce these gaps. I think you also make a really great point on how while we're very hopeful for the GDMT endpoints here, you know, the outcomes, you know, likely are not going to be seen here just based on the way that the trial is set up. But needless to say, I think if we improve GDMT with an intervention like this, it certainly will be very worthy of celebration. You know, I think when these, it's an open question on whether like implementation type trials is just improving a medication use, is that good enough, or do we really need the outcomes? You know, I think to me, the medication use is the focal point, because, you know, in a randomized trial of placebo versus study drug, you know, and you improve outcomes, well, you're having really on one arm 100% exposure versus 0% exposure in the placebo arm. Here, if you can improve a GDMT by even like, you know, 10, 20%, so that delta is 10 or 20%, might not have enough power to show a clinical outcome benefit, but that is a clinically meaningful benefit. And I think we need all the help we can to try to overcome clinical inertia. So really, I'm looking forward to seeing these results.
I fully agree, Steve. And I think we're hearing a recurrent theme of implementation science and focus around implementation trials. And ACC 2022 is going to highlight and spotlight a number of those initiatives. So with that, I think we can wrap things up for this episode. We really look forward to seeing many of you in Washington, D.C. sharing ideas, and more so sharing stories over lost time over the last 2 years. So remember, you can find Don't Miss a Beat on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and practicalcardiology.com, your home for the latest clinically relevant news and information related to cardiology. Thanks so much, and thanks for listening. We'll see you very soon.